Hey, 2019 is upon us, and that means you need to go to leadingsaints.org and get the 2019 Ward Calendar. This is a huge wall calendar that shows every day of the year and does a fantastic job in the bishop's office, in the ward clerk's office, or even on the ward bulletin board. Go check it out at leadingsaints.org and order one today.
My name is Jared Goodat, and I am from Rexburg, Idaho. I think I first came across the Leading LDS organization on my Twitter feed. Through those Leading LDS Twitter posts, I became a quick follower of the Leading LDS content. Whether it's the social media posts or the website content or even podcast episodes, my leadership life in the church has been enriched by the Leading LDS organization. For example, there have been several specific podcast episodes that have influenced me in positive ways with regard to how I interact with members of my ward. I remember a specific Leading LDS blog post even that helped me understand the differences between conservative Mormons and progressive Mormons, which I hadn't considered before. And several comments from a Leading LDS website article that helped define my approach to helping repentant church members with taking or even not partaking of the sacrament. Leading LDS often adds what I would consider practical applications to the church's handbook of instructions and ministering resources. And the Leading LDS organization has been a blessing in my life and as I serve faithfully in the LDS church. Remember, be a leader, not a calling.
Welcome back to the Leading Saints podcast. My name is Kurt Frankham and I will be your host. Now, if you're new to Leading Saints, this is a podcast where we come together, bring the experts and talk about all things leadership in the context of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And regardless if you're a lay leader or not, I think you'll find value as you go back in time and discover more than 300 plus episodes that we've done where we talk about some fascinating topics for sure. Now, you're probably wondering, well, this is weird. Why does the host sound like death? That's because I am in the midst of fighting the flu. Oh, it's awful, folks. Make sure you go get your flu shot. Even though I've been told that I have influenza A, and that's not even covered in the general flu shot. But nonetheless, anything you can do to avoid this abyss of pain and agony and moaning, do it. So anyways, send your prayers my way. I'd appreciate it. But nonetheless, I'm pushing myself. I've dragged myself down to my office to record this intro and outro because I want to make sure this episode gets out this week because it's an inspiring one. It's one that I recorded while I was up in Anchorage, Alaska. I was connected through the Waller family. Bless their hearts. What a wonderful family that I stayed with up in Wasilla, Alaska. Shout out to them. I can't say enough about them, and I look forward to the next time I get to associate with them. But the Waller family connected me with Jody Taylor, who's in the Anchorage area, and she is in public affairs there. That was her calling. She was the coordinating council public affairs rep or whatever for the coordinating council. And this is, you know, public affairs is a calling that often gets forgotten, or especially in Utah. I don't know if anybody out there knows a good public affairs individual in Utah. I'd love to connect with them because I think it's calling that we just don't know what to do when the culture of our community is so Latter-day Saints, right? But anyways, it's a good case study that we talk with Jody Taylor about some things that she did to really build bridges with the local communities and other religious organizations. And I think we have a lot to learn from it. So here is my interview with Jody Taylor. Today, I'm in the home with Jody Taylor. How are you, Jody?
I'm good. Thank you, Kurt.
You have a beautiful home here. We're literally looking at the ocean out your window, but this isn't a San Diego ocean, if some of our listeners are thinking
no,
of that.
No, we're the -2 degree ocean
nice.
Today.
Yeah, I'm not going to go run through the ice out there, but there it is. And I'm sure in the summer, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And hopefully while we're here, an eagle will fly by.
Nice. Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your background. What do generally people need, listeners need to know about you?
Well, I feel like I'm the normal member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I got married when I was at BYU, met my husband there. We came back to Anchorage, Alaska.
Both born and raised here?
I was. My husband was not. And when we came back here, we actually had our daughter graduate BYU with us. That was super fun. We already had kids at BYU. And then when we came back up here, we've expanded our family. We have 5 children. We've also had my niece or my husband's niece and nephew come and live with us. And then we've had my cousin's 2 babies live with us. So we've had a lot of children involved in our family. And with that, we've also tried to expand what we do professionally. My husband works full time. We invest in real estate, and I do that part time with our children so I can focus on them. And we're involved with church in our community. So I feel like very normal LDS life.
Nice. That's great. And your husband recently is made the deputy attorney general. Is that accurate for Alaska?
For the state of Alaska. Wow. Over the civil division.
So is that like a dream job for him? I mean, is he...
I don't know. We've never thought about it till he got a phone call.
Oh, really?
Was asked to do it.
So he wasn't trying to jockey
Well, I think that coming into this public realm is really fun for him, and he's excited to help the governor and push forward some new ideas to make Alaska a better place.
Cool. That's great. Effort to be a part of. And he was also called as the bishop. Was it about a year ago, did you say?
No, it was a couple of months ago, actually.
Oh, a couple of months ago. So all this came at you at once, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, pretty close. Nice. Pretty close together.
So he flies out to Juneau every week and comes back?
Well, during the session. He goes down during the session. So okay. He'll leave Sunday nights and then fly back Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And just bishoping here and there in between meetings and taking phone calls, I would mm-hmm. imagine. But you're figuring it out, as mm-hmm. we all do.
Yeah, that's like good. Everybody.
Nice. And most recently, you had the calling as the Coordinating Council Director of Public Affairs. Mm-hmm. What was that about?
What is that about? That's about building bridges in our community. And I think from my perspective, that's about taking the ideals of ministry and putting those outward facing outside, just what maybe sometimes we think of ministering as just in our congregations and just to our own members, but it's expanding that to how the church can interface in our community, how we work with leaders and officials and work with other nonprofits and just work side by side building bridges in the community and helping people understand better who we are.
Yeah. And so did you have a stake level public affairs calling before you were called as the Coordinating Council?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I did. I helped in our stake and here in Anchorage, and a lot of the media market for Anchorage kind of drives the statewide market. So that was helpful to see. And a lot of our nonprofits and different organizations are hubbed in Anchorage. So that was helpful, at least that way, to know how a lot of the context stayed the same when mm-hmm. you expanded it to a state level.
Yeah. So how would you describe, I mean, I've learned just this past weekend about what the church is like in Alaska and uh-huh. in Anchorage area and Wasilla. So how would you describe it to the audience as far as maybe putting that up against a Utah experience of the church or maybe a quote unquote traditional church experience?
Right. That's a really good question. So Anchorage and Alaska generally versus other places, we actually have a really high number of LDS people who live in Alaska. So kind of depending on the different numbers you look at, we're either the second or third largest church in Alaska. So our footprint, we have members all around the state, branches in little off the grid areas too. We have three stakes in Anchorage, which I think would be surprising for most people to know and understand that. But we have a great presence, a lot of good people involved around the state and a lot to build on.
And we drove past the temple on our way here.
Yeah, we have a temple.
So, and I'm sure many more in the future to come, hopefully.
Maybe. Yeah, that would be great.
That's just what I've been hearing in Salt Lake. Okay, don't spread that around. But no, I'm just kidding.
Glad you got the insider scoop.
That's right. So with as far as in the stake, when you're serving as a state public affairs specialist, what was that dynamic like as opposed to the Coordinating Council?
You can do a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Are you more of like a consultant in the Coordinating Council level? Like,
yeah. It's just different. You work when you work as a stake director of public affairs, you can help your stake president with your area, and very different than normal church callings. When you're working in public affairs, you're not stopped at a random road that's been assigned as a stake boundary. You're assigned for opinion leaders within the area you have. So that part makes it very flexible and fluid. And so you work with your stake president on goals that you want to see happen and that you can help forward their goals within, the opinion leader market, I think would probably be the better way to say it for that area. Versus if you're working for the Coordinating Council, you're helping the directors of public affairs within their stakes do that same thing and helping the stake presidents understand maybe if they have a particular goal, how they can get there, you help them get there, whatever that is. So a little bit different in how that works. But I think there's general principles that flow for each area. And I think that move for us as individuals and how we can be involved in our community. A lot of the principles that I've learned in working and interfacing for the church institutionally boil down to what can I do as a bishop? What can I do as a Relief Society president? What can I do as a mother of, 9 children that had been in our house? all of those things, I think, overlap the same way on some principles of just being involved.
Yeah. So just to, I mean, and I don't know, I'm sure in every area, as far as public affairs is concerned, there's just different characteristics and approaches that, that people take. And so where would be a good place, because you've had some interesting experiences with outreach involving the LGBT community and other things, where would be a good place to start to maybe tell that story and start to understand your experience with all mm-hmm. that?
I think the place to start is be involved where you feel drawn to. So for example, with our family, we have a lot of small children still. And so we chose, one of the things my husband and I chose to do was to buy a cotton candy machine and buy a popcorn machine. So awesome. We could start volunteering. If you could take a cotton candy and a popcorn machine somewhere, children were welcome, right? So we go to a lot of different events for the foster children or for there's an inner city area in Anchorage and we take it down there and we work with a lot of the leaders there. So I think that that's something that people can hold on to where if that's of interest to them to focus with children because they have children and they want to lead out and show their family how to be involved, start with something like that. One of the other ways you can be involved, you know, professionally, if you choose to do something. When my husband was at BYU at the law school, they have a law and religion symposium every year. He volunteered there and we started seeing how the church interfaced for religious freedom, how law and religion come together. And that spurned for my husband and I an interest in religious freedom and mm-hmm. working in that sphere. And so when the opportunity came in Alaska for us to do that, we had already seen how the church had done that at BYU. We had, well, not the church, but how BYU had interfaced on religious freedom. So we felt comfortable. We had a model to work from and to go forward from.
Yeah. Do you get direction as far as what to do? Or they just say, you're now the person and go figure it out like the rest of these callings?
So one of the ways that I think if you wanted to get involved in religious freedom would be to start finding an issue that was compelling and had a need right then. Mm-hmm. In Anchorage and in Alaska, when my husband and I got called to our calling, there was a sexual orientation gender identity ordinance that had passed in Anchorage. And many religious entities were concerned about how that interacted for them institutionally on what they could do. And so there was an effort to build a chorus of religious voices and churches to come together and say, would we be able to do something like the model in Utah, mm-hmm. where they brought together sexual orientation, gender identity bills on a state level, and also combine that with how churches are, what needs churches have to be protected, and just bring those two issues to the table together in one bill. And so we did have authorization to do that, to go forward, and we have been working on that. One of the great things about working with people who on some issues might feel very differently than you is coming together and finding common ground and finding how much in earnest, you do think the same. Because when I called, for example, in my role, when I'm calling in and I'm institutionally identifying myself in my role in public affairs to the LGBT community, not surprisingly, I didn't get a lot of phone calls back, you know, the first time around I did that. But as I have gotten to know people and they've gotten to know my husband and I and other people involved in the religious community, it has built friendships, it's built bonds. We've had many at this same dinner table we're sitting at. Many of those people have come to my house as our friends for dinner. And in fact, let me read you. This is from the person who founded the LGBT community here in Alaska. She wrote a letter that said, in the beginning, I have mistakenly felt that many of my GLBT, and she likes to flip it around and say that lesbians don't always have to be first, activism was totally at odds with Mormon doctrine. Through her persistent dedication and working across cultures, Jody has taught me not only do we agree on many things, we can do so respectfully, but it has been much more than respectful. We are now, and then she goes on to say, we are now truly friends. And I think that there, you know, of course, like all of us, like my husband and I have disagreement on issues. We all have a disagreement on an issue, but at the end of the day, can we be friends? Can we find our common ground and work together on things? And I think that as we expand our ministry outside of our church and broaden it and look outside, beautiful examples like that continue. Well, I think we'll just continue to keep happening in our lives.
So it sounds like you had a a basic understanding with you and your husband as far as religious liberty goes. And then there was some legislation coming up that was similar to maybe some the legislation process that happened in Utah. And then, mm-hmm. and so as a public affairs representative, you saw that as an opportunity to jump in and have a voice there. Is that, am I following that
we
right?
We helped create that. Yeah.
Okay.
We helped,
so you helped create the legislation.
Not the legislation, but build the voice together to say, are we interested in doing something like this and bringing together the stakeholders to make something like that happen? And I think that's one of the really key points for people looking to be involved in their community is when you get to know key people, key influencers, you are able to do a lot. When they know you and they trust you, you can get a lot of things done with collaboration. And I think that's a really key takeaway for anyone in whatever community they're in. The more key opinion leaders that you have access to and you've built trust with, the greater the opportunity and chances yeah. you have to do something.
So you saw that conversation happening in those communities. And I mean, you didn't necessarily have to jump in and get involved.
We helped
in those.
Create that conversation.
So you helped create that. So
what? Create that conversation and the interest in doing something together. Because most people on this issue, it's a flashpoint divisive yeah. issue when those come together. So the idea of coming together and collaborating on an issue like this is yeah. not happening in a lot of places.
So what was the spark that thought we're going to start that communication? Was there an event or was it legislation you saw coming or what was it that motivated that, you know, we're going to get this group together and actually talk?
It was the ordinance here in Anchorage where okay. it was very divisive.
And maybe describe that dynamic. What did that divisiveness look like?
I think we've all seen the news. So for Anchorage, it looked like people on both sides of this issue would come in and testify to the Anchorage. We have an assembly to the Anchorage assembly. Oh, I don't know how many hundreds of hours of testimony people wanted to give and provide on this. And out of that came the idea that it didn't need to be a fight, that you could do something together. And so that's where slowly but surely all of the stakeholders have come together and have decided this is good to work together on and where are our common ground
yeah.
and areas of overlap.
Sounds like there's very much an us and them dynamic, right? That we're clearly on separate teams.
It started that way, but I like to think of it as we in pushing legislation forward. And yeah. I think everyone else does too, that we are pushing something forward. And there might be different, I mean, when you're representing a different stakeholder, you want to make sure that base is covered. But certainly as an idea of the legislation going forward, yeah. it is a we.
So you make the decision that we're going to be involved in that. So what do you start? I'm just thinking of the leader that's out there that recognizes that same dynamic that's very divisive. It's just there's some negative energy there. What are the first steps that you took to really start that conversation and coming together so that you could come have a plan at the end of the day? Mm-hmm.
So one of the areas on one way that I think you would start initially is just to build your chorus of support for the area that you need to come represent. So for example, in this issue, we built the support from the churches first and said, yeah. are we interested in this? And we sat down and explained and went over. We had experts come in and talk to us. And once we were united on that, then we broadened it to the group that wouldn't have thought the same as us on all issues. And when the LGBT community came in, like I said, it took a while, but mm-hmm. we were able to all work together and yeah. and now we'll see what happens this session.
And with that first step, with bringing the churches together, did you have to work out some levels of prejudices that did some churches just feel like, you know, that's evil and, you know, just let them be and let's not worry about them? I mean, did you have to work through some of those dynamics or was everybody on board?
No, there are people who yeah. have had long held beliefs, or they also don't want to get in front of their congregation on something, which in our church, we're not used to thinking of things like that. That mm-hmm. when our prophet says something, I think if you have a testimony of the prophet, you would expect you would get your confirmation on what's changed. And then, you know, we would go forward, but other congregations don't run that way. And mm-hmm. the leader of that congregation does not have the same autonomy, I think, that a prophet of God, mm-hmm. when he's making an announcement for where a direction change, where that might need to go. So there are certainly churches that are not going to jump on this because of where their congregation's at. But there are also reasons to draw, or a lot of ways that you can build relationships. So for example, when we hosted the first summit on this, we co-hosted it with the Catholic Church. And for a lot of people, just seeing that our church and the Catholic Church co-hosted a summit together was really amazing to them on a local level. And I'm happy that that was amazing to them. For me, that didn't seem like anything watershed, but if for other people that helps them change their perspective and point of view, I'm happy.
Yeah, cool. So I'm interested, and I know I'm getting into the weeds, but this is where leaders live, is in the weeds with these some of these issues. So you get the local churches on board, or whomever is willing to be on board moving in this direction. And then is the next, I'm just curious, as far as that step of reaching out to the LGBT community, is that where the summit came in? Is that the purpose of the summit?
Mm-hmm. Was to invite the LGBT community in and also other churches to come in and hear about this and legislators. We did all three stakeholder groups. And how, for us, how that worked and any type of legislation that someone is going to work for and look for the church institutionally to sponsor, that has to be approved by the most senior leadership of our church. So that direction would need to be sought for and, mm-hmm. and received before something like this happened. But oftentimes, if there's something in play in your community, you can flag that for your stake president, for your Area 70, and say, this is going on. You know, we would like to join as a part of this. And you can be involved as an individual. Mm-hmm. All of those things could happen, you know, separately.
So what is, I think some leaders may be listening, they don't even know what a summit is. So what does that even look like? Or was it on a Saturday?
A summit makes a fancy, it's a fancy term for bringing experts together and then the stakeholders that surround the issue that you're going forward for. So we brought together the religious community with people who would talk about the legal side of it. And we brought in all of the stakeholders for the LGBT community, and then we brought in legislators. And each one of those are going to have different questions and different areas of interest and concerns and experience that they want to bring into that. And so, you know.
And then did you hold it like on a Saturday and there's several sessions?
We held it for 2 days. I think it was 2 weekdays, 2 business days here in town. And
okay.
Yeah.
And you put an agenda together and have different speakers and mm-hmm. panels and.
Yeah, we had a group from Washington, D.C. come up, some Utah people, one from Chicago. Hmm. It was kind of from all over.
And you just find these individuals who have experience discussing these issues and the dynamics of it, and then they present or facilitate those conversations?
For what we were planning on, some had been involved very directly in the Utah legislation, and so they came up to speak to that specifically.
Oh, gotcha.
Others were lobbyists back in D.C. that understood this issue. They lobbied for the First Amendment, and so they understood both sides of the issue and came up and spoke to it too.
Nice. And that was a success, yes. The summit.
Well, yeah. I mean, anytime you have a conversation about something and people can come together, I think that's a success to have a dialogue and make better friendships. And I think even if we had come out with nothing on the backside of that, I think it would have been worthwhile. But we came out with people wanting to move forward.
Yeah.
And
moving forward meant what?
Moving forward with conversations about legislation.
Gotcha. And I love that you mentioned that word, you know, just having a dialogue. And this, you know, there may be a bishop who or a leader that's not involved in, you know, some of these things that will lead to legislation, but right. They can step back and think, okay, how can I have a dialogue? Is there some type of summit, quote unquote summit, that I could have with the local community or my ward even to even just start these and have a dialogue? Because the dialogue leads to connection, understanding, mm-hmm. empathy, and then you have a foundation to move forward with. That's what mm-hmm. I'm hearing.
Yeah. And I think also one of the things that happen when you build friendships is there's overlapping areas that you can build the friendship even outside of maybe the direct issue you're addressing. So for example, during this, we had an apartment building that it was an arson situation. Many families were immediately displaced, very large apartment building. And because we happened to be meeting together, we just said, hey, these families need socks. They need, you know, they've just lost everything overnight. And they were in an apartment. They didn't have insurance. Except for one, all the other families had no insurance. So families that lost everything. And coming together and working on something like that, I think was also helpful. And that's a side thing. You put that out to your community and you do a drive and everybody comes together. But I think there's ways in whatever it is that we want to do that we can bring our love for, you know, the way that we follow Jesus Christ, we bring that into it.
Yeah.
And we bring in the humanity side and working together to help our fellow men have a better life. And I think that is very important in any situation you're involved in.
Yeah. I appreciate listening to the story is what you went through that, because I think it's a very effective case study to get an idea of what effective public affairs looks like. And but that doesn't mean that public affairs always leads towards some type of legislation that's happening.
No,
but in this case, that's just what that legislation was coming, whether you wanted it or not. And it might as well be in the conversation.
Yeah. Right? And help shape that. Yeah. And I think one of the things, just as we're looking at being involved and working with others, I think you pick something that is important to someone else. When you're working with other people, for example, one of the stake presidents we worked with, he had a 10 on an issue that I would have maybe put a 1 or a 2 on. But I thought, well, this is so important to him. I really need to try to help him with this. And so we did. And the person, again, it actually happened to be legislation on a different issue. But as that bubbled through, the legislator that I worked with ended up being really key and important for me later. And I think if I hadn't done what was important to someone else, then I wouldn't have had that key relationship that I needed to build, you know, unknowingly. And that's happened in other areas too. A friend of mine from the African-American community here in Anchorage, she wanted to do this outside rally in February. It was freezing. I had almost no interest in doing an outside rally and speaking at an outside rally in February. But I thought, it's important to her. She's done a lot for me. I can show up. And I think we did something that was easy for me to do. And then she asked me to speak. And I said, okay, I'll speak. And I brought a missionary with me and she sang a song. Okay, that was great. But my dividend from that is that because she knows I'll help her with her events, on the flip side, she's done things for me that I couldn't have done. For example, we hosted a 9/11 commemoration event. And it was at the time when Black Lives Matter and police, there was just this flashpoint in our country on this. And she got the African American youth to come with the police and do the pledge at the start of our event. And it was very powerful. It was something I couldn't have pulled together and have done, but it was an event we were pulling together. And that was something she could do that I couldn't do. And then at another time, she also runs the Martin Luther King celebration for Anchorage. And she's invited us in to come be a choir and just to do different things for them. So I feel like anytime you can help other people on events that are important to them, from my experience, I've always gained from that. Even freezing in February was fun with her. I ended up loving it, but you always, you know, when you need to cash in some chips, people are there to help you too.
I mean, it's classic networking, right? I mean, you see it a lot in the business world, but sometimes in the public affairs or in your calling, you don't draw upon these networking skills. And I think your points 1 and 2 sort of come together that, you know, being involved in areas that are important to you, but also being sensitive to what is the local leadership? What are they worrying about? Or other local religious communities? What are they worrying about? And then, helping them out. And then when you need some help down the road, they'll be there to help. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. That's been my experience.
Awesome. You also mentioned as far as talking very openly about your faith. What examples come to mind with that?
So I've had some funny examples with that. One of the things that I think was really fun, I was working on a food drive and a bunch of our interfaith community was meeting in our church. And as we walked out of the church, I was walking out with a pastor and he said, well, is that where, and I can't even remember what he said. It was so funny. Like the grand hoo-ha, he was pointing up to a steeple, up to our steeple and said, is that where the grand hoo-ha lives or whatever he said. And I'm like, yeah, that's where the grand hoo-ha lives. You know, right over there. And then I realized he was serious and I said, what are you talking about? You know, no one lives here. And I explained to him our church leadership, but I thought outside of us doing, you know, this event together and me talking very openly about our faith. So he could ask me about some odd, I don't even know what he had heard that he felt comfortable asking me about it. And I just think those opportunities happen because someone can feel comfortable with you and you've mentioned your faith. So people will say something about it. Another opportunity that I think just provides clarity about our church, and it doesn't have to be on any institutional level. I was working or am working right now on helping Alaska with its reading scores. That's education. And when President Nelson said education is a tenement of our church, I thought, oh, that's great. I'm going to use that. You know, I'm glad he said it that way. And so when I went and introduced my role and I talked about my children and I talked about my church and this is a tenement of our church. And I was happy to be able to say that because what good person doesn't want to understand that Jesus wants you to be educated and wants children to be educated, right? I mean, those are good ways to bring your faith up and to help, you know, again, help people better understand who we are in the community.
Yeah. And I would imagine there's sort of that hesitation for maybe some people thinking, you know, yeah, we all know we're religious here, but I'm not going to talk about, you know, in depths of my religion or, but just find opportunities of, you know, bringing things up or getting comfortable. So they will mm-hmm. ask you questions or you mm-hmm. can ask them questions and, yeah. and that's how we connect and bond.
Right? Yeah. Well, and I think that brings us to another really good point too, is that it doesn't matter how your age in this situation, you can lead out in your community in whatever age you are. And one of the things I wanted to bring up on that was my daughter. In high school, she was asked to join our city's library board. They have a teen liaison on the library board. And she, from her personal experience, she transferred to a school in the middle of first grade where everyone could read, but her school hadn't taught her. She wasn't where everyone else was. And it was hard for her. And her teacher said, just start checking a book out every day at the library and try to read and do this program. And let's see if this doesn't spur you to catch up. So that for her spurred an interest in the library. She loved it. So when she got asked to be the library liaison, she thought, oh, this is great. This is going to be really fun. So she did. And I thought, okay, you know, this is a resume builder for her. But when she got on that library board, the second meeting she attended, they brought up their pornography policy. And I think if she'd said, well, my church's stance is this about pornography, probably, you know, every voting board member would have not cared, frankly, what her church's stance was about pornography. But she came at that and she walked away from that meeting where the stance in Anchorage at the libraries about pornography was that you could openly view pornography, you could listen to it. And if someone complained, the librarian would help move the person who was complaining to another area. So they had a place they could be away from pornography. So she felt very uncomfortable with that. My daughter did. But she also thought, I'm the teenager. Everyone else on this board is college educated. They're well into their professions. I don't have anything to say here that can make a difference. And she left feeling really bad. And she asked Heavenly Father to take away this feeling she had of feeling bad about this. And no feeling went away. Instead, the answer was, well, you're feeling bad because you need to do something. You know, let's get something going. So she came home, we talked about it, and she developed a roadmap where she looked at a Supreme Court decision and brought that in about pornography being an obscenity. She put a poll out to see if what the public supported, if they wanted this or if they wanted something different. And she went to people that worked on this issue for the police and for the FBI locally. And they put this poll out to their community and got some very good feedback. So when she went back to the board or when she was on at the next board meeting, when they considered this issue and were ready to vote on it, and their plan was a unanimous vote that what they would change would be people could view pornography. They would just be put in a corner to view it and have headphones given to them from the library. She ended up being able to flip the board completely as she provided that background and the context to say, this needs to be a place for children to go. And here's all these reasons and the public supports that we're a pornography free zone in the libraries. Mm-hmm. And they flipped. They 100% oh, wow. flipped. So I think it doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, if you're an introvert, an extrovert, if you like to participate in organize events, or if you like to do the flyers or something small, it doesn't matter how you want to be involved in the community. You can minister in any way and at any time and phase in your life and have an impact, because God's going to guide you when you want to go do good and help move His work forward and help others.
Yeah. And so that wasn't necessarily, I mean, she was involved there and saw the opportunity to take action there, but it wasn't you weren't talking to her as the public affairs specialist in the area.
No, not at all. Yeah. I'm talking about how can you be involved in your community and elevate your community.
Yeah,
that to me is the most important. To me, that's our role, is how can we help elevate our community and increase understanding about how we are. And everybody knew who my daughter was. They all know she's going to be, now she's at BYU, and they wanted her to call in from BYU. So everyone on that board is well aware of her religious background, but also that she stood up for something that was right.
Yeah.
And led some adults.
So it makes me wonder, I mean, the public affairs calling, again, not that this was happening because of your calling, but the public affairs actions that maybe a ward or state can take, it seems like a very adult calling. Like, I'm going to go meet with a mayor, or I'm going to meet with a city council person. But what would you, any advice that comes to mind as far as getting youth involved or helping them understand that when you see these types of things, you can actually take action?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think highlighting, one of the roles that you can do is highlight the social media use that's used for good. And you can, so oftentimes in public affairs, you have your own social media that you are outlets that you're using yeah. for your stake or for your city, you know, whatever mm-hmm. makes sense for you or your state, or even just going in as a fireside situation, talking to the youth or talking to the adults and giving them ways that they might want to be involved. And you can highlight particular ways that people can be involved. So one thing that I learned as when my daughter did this pornography issue, she got an award from, she got a scholarship from one of our local businesses, and they call it the Hero Award. They give scholarships out to children who do something. So my daughter was invited, as was a six-year-old down in a southeast city in Alaska who wanted to, her park was giving all the children splinters. And she came home and asked her parents what she could do, and they helped her pull it together. So they got the park resituated, and it was a great place now for kids. So awesome. I think that, again, I mean, to me, that's kind of the same issue as you see an issue,
yeah.
you respond, it doesn't matter your age, it doesn't matter your calling, you can make something yeah. happen.
And it just brings to mind, like you mentioned, you know, having a fireside or a meeting, or just, you know, there's youth leaders out there that can maybe reach out to the public affairs specialist in their stake, or the public affairs specialist, if maybe they're like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. Well, maybe go to the youth and see if you can have a meeting or something where you can say, hey, you know, if you recognize things in your community, you can actually do something about them. Let me give you a few examples of what that looks like. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there's all sorts of leverage there that you could find issues that are important. Again, finding the youth, what's important to you and having change. And now, I mean, your daughter's life is forever blessed for because of that experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And well, and I think it taught a lot of people and herself, I think most importantly, it taught herself that she could stand up regardless of her age and that God expected her to.
Yeah.
And then I think it taught the youth around her that, and that they could be forces and agents for good.
Yeah.
That they just didn't need to wait till they graduated from college, wait until there was a particular time in their life that they would be able to create change.
Yeah.
Or on the flip side, I'm thinking about another event or another situation where there was a widow and she was called upon, or there was a tax cap reform issue here in Anchorage. And all the businesses kind of didn't want to jump on the bandwagon to keep the tax cap where it was. And so this one lady stepped up, put the seed money down. And as soon as they knew there was a viable campaign to fight a tax cap issue that a widow let out on, it started, you know, and it, and off to the races, all the people that normally you would have thought would be involved in something like that hopped in and it got going. So on any side of the spectrum, it doesn't matter who you are and where you are.
Yeah.
You can do what makes sense for you and make things happen.
A lot of times it doesn't require you to run for public office or be on the city mm-hmm. council, right? I mean, everybody can step forward and take action and have significant change.
Yeah, you That's can. Awesome. Yeah, totally.
Cool. Maybe speak about just, you know, you spent a lot of time, especially in this legislation and community building you've done around religious liberty. Anything around religious liberty that would help leaders better understand that issue, or things that you've learned, or any advice around that topic?
I think that how you bring something up is really important to if people will listen to you or not. So if you run around and bang a drum, people are going to stop listening to you.
Primarily on Facebook, right?
Yeah. Yes. But if you can speak in a way that you can acknowledge why people would feel anxious about what you're bringing up, and you can acknowledge maybe some hurt that has been in the past or different things like that and listen, then you are able to move forward once people feel like you can listen, understand where they're coming from, and then move forward on that.
Nice.
The time is ripe now mm-hmm. for people to try to get involved on religious freedom issues. We have our demographic, especially in the United States, is changing. People are not as involved in religion. And so bringing up the good that religion does, and frankly, being good in your community, being a religious group that does good, helps.
Yeah.
if people don't know that our church does anything good, why do they care that they're here and that they deserve any special protection?
Yeah.
People don't care. So if you're not adding to your community voice and adding to the good in your community, then people have a hard time understanding why they would want to protect that.
Yeah, for sure. And it comes down to sort of like, what have you done for me lately? I don't care about your history, but you know, what purposes do you have in the community now? Right.
Uh-huh. And so, well, and I would say that's for outside of Utah, probably in Utah, everybody sees that all the time, right?
It's a whole nother animal.
But. Yes. But outside of Utah, it's just different. And I think it's a great way for your church to come and just be a presence with other churches to say, we help our community. We care like Jesus did for the poor and the needy. And that's our role. And everyone in your community that's thoughtful cares for the poor and the needy in their community. They want to make a change on that. Right. Yeah. So,
and I would imagine, I mean, just as far as what that action looks like is, you know, if you don't put a spotlight on everything, look at what we did, you know, we don't want that, but it sounds like it's all about those connections to other churches in the community and then other just civic groups or community groups that you can be a part of so that they know that you represent a certain body, generally speaking, and that you are contributing and trying to make a difference. Is that?
To me, the spotlight is addressing the issue. If you're addressing an important issue, the right people are already going to be there. So you don't need to worry about that side of it.
Gotcha.
Right? Yeah. So if you're addressing an issue that's very important to your community, let's just talk about homelessness, for example. In Anchorage, if you're homeless and it's negative like it is right now, it is -2 degrees outside, you run into some serious issues. You don't just have someone who's uncomfortable. You're running into a life and death situation in some areas. And so that's important to people to address that. Another issue here in Alaska, we rank the lowest in our reading scores in the country. Okay, that's important for people. Thoughtful people care about that. So I just think that when you involve yourself in issues that matter, that need to be addressed in your community, you don't need to worry about making sure your profile is elevated, right?
Right,
you know, that you just take care of important things and follow Jesus's example and
it takes care of itself. Yeah. You don't need to pass out flyers and directly remind people. I was going to ask about, as far as the dynamic of sometimes I think local leaders are afraid to mention any, you know, you mentioned a lot of this work led to legislation, right? Mm-hmm. And suddenly it becomes a political thing that leaders are less more hesitant to not bring it up in church or talk about it because they don't want to be perceived as if they are influencing the ward to vote a certain way on legislation. Mm-hmm. So any advice that you've had as far as when public affairs work crosses over into that political world?
So I would say most public affairs work does not touch legislation, right? Mm-hmm. We have a very odd situation here. Yeah. But what members and what our leaders can do, and that's very clear from our church, the direction's very clear, is that our church institutionally does not support candidates, right? And we do reserve the right to support legislation for religious freedom and on moral issues. Those are the two areas our church will choose to be involved in. So outside of that, what can I do as a stake president? I can support really good candidates. Very clear. I can donate. I can host a fundraiser. But if I'm a stake president, I can't invite anyone to my fundraiser that I sign a temple recommend for. Uh-huh. So that's off limits, but nothing else is. Or if I'm even the Area 70, not the full-time, not the general authority 70, but the Area 70, I can also do that same thing. I'm a bishop. I can do that same thing. So I would say get involved and influence your community for good on the political side and support candidates you believe in and the Release Society president, everybody, because that helps shape your community and lets you have influence with people who will impact you and on your daily life. So that's to me a no-brainer that you would want to be involved in that. And then outside of that, outside of people getting candidates and getting elected, any person can go to their elected officials and talk to them about things that are important to them, right? Mm-hmm. So our church could go and talk to someone and say, this is important to us. How do we help?
Yeah.
That's a welcome conversation to any mayor.
Yeah, for sure.
We want to help on homelessness. This is important to us. How do we help you? What are you currently doing? What do we have in our wheelhouse already that we can just expand and do?
Yeah. And I appreciate you mentioning that as far as with the leader dynamic, that typically, for example, a stake president, before he's called as a stake president, he's probably already an influential figure in the local community, regardless of his calling. And so then when he's called there, that doesn't mean you can no longer be that influential person mm-hmm. in the community. Of course, you can't stand up in state conference and say you should vote this way because yada, yada. But nonetheless, you should still exercise that right as a citizen to leverage that influence that doesn't necessarily come from being a stake president, but comes from being a active, respected citizen in the community, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like I said, your calling doesn't take away your opportunity to be a citizen.
Yeah.
So you're still that way.
It happens often, unfortunately. So anything we're missing as far as public affairs goes or some of the examples that you've shared that we haven't touched on?
I don't think so. I just think I would encourage everyone to take a step to get involved if they're feeling like they want to go out and influence their community. I think that God has designed a role for each one of us to help lift our communities and help add light to our community. And we each have very unique and special ways that we can do that, right? God's given each one of us interests, skills, associates, contacts for us to make those things happen. And sometimes I think when we're saying, well, I want to be involved, I want to do something, God, who do I serve today? Open a door for me. Part of that is proactively taking steps to be involved. So then you do get those opportunities. People are calling you to come and calling you by the phone. Sorry, not a calling like in our church, but calling and asking you to come participate and not just waiting for God to send you someone, that you're out actively looking for ways for him to show you where he needs you to go help and minister to others.
Awesome. Well, you've inspired me even as a Utah Latter-day Saint to think, many are listening in Utah thinking, what's public affairs? But anyways, hopefully we can be more of a dominant calling in Utah as well. But last question I have for you is, as you think back of your time in public affairs, being a leader there in your community, how has that leadership role made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
It's expanded my understanding of my brothers and sisters considerably. And I just appreciate the good that each person and each group of people brings to our community. God doesn't just love his children in our church. He loves all of his children. And I appreciate so much the good that other organizations do, the ministry and the work that so many people do and in to make our communities good places to be. I have seen that over and over again, and the hand of God inspiring so many people. I just really appreciate him allowing us and trusting us as mortals to do work and giving us the opportunity to help others and to see that in the fabric of our communities.
That concludes my interview with Jody Taylor. Didn't I sound so much better when I wasn't sick? Anyways, I'd love to get your feedback on this one, especially as far as public affairs go. This is a calling, I think, where we have a lot of opportunity to show leadership amongst our communities. Sometimes it's easy to kind of get into our box of Latter-day Saint world, and we lose great opportunities to connect with communities and topics that are really forming our communities. So I hope you were inspired by Jody. I know I was, and even to the point where I'm like, man, I want to get to know my public affairs people a little bit better in our stake and see where I can help there. Because again, I think there's a lot of help that can be offered for sure. All right, guys, I'm going to go lay down, and maybe I should change this intro and outro when I come back from the dead. But all right, thanks for your prayers, and hopefully I'm back next week with a stronger voice. And don't forget, visit our product store at leadingsaints.org and check out the 2019 Ward calendar. And remember, be a leader, not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. When the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.